I don't buy the idea that, you know, the society the way it is right now, it has to be this way.
Welcome to Rewrite the Rules with your host, Alex Starr.
So many of us choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality.
It's time to live life on your own terms.
What do you really want?
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Rewrite the Rules. I am Alex Starr. Thank you so much for tuning in, y'all. The guy I have on today, he is the most interesting cats I have had on this podcast. And that's saying a lot, because I think I've been very grateful to have some fascinating people that have done a lot. But his resume, and what I like so much about him, is that he is literally showing us a different way that society could function, at least at an individual level, which is somewhat of an oxymoron, but he is a glimpse into what other possibilities there are in the very way that our consciousness is focused and the way that we all live our lives. His name is Rob Greenfield, and he has a book out called Dude Making a Difference. But he has a pretty substantial following across the internet, and he has lived in a tiny house for 2 or 3 years. He has basically given up money almost entirely. He makes a pretty substantial income off of speaking engagements, and he did a TV show for the Discovery Channel about traveling to South America with absolutely no money and no phone and making his way from Brazil to Colombia. He has done all these things. He lives off of $5,000 a year. The rest of the money that he makes, he donates. He does not have a cell phone. He uses a computer and Wi-Fi, of course. And he lives with his girlfriend, kind of traveling around the country doing these amazing things. Rode cross country to make every community better as he went. So just really an interesting way to think about what we're all doing and why are we doing it. What an interesting way to see a completely different way. Talk about, you know, rewriting the rules. He is doing it with almost every aspect of his life living within this society. It is fascinating. I am so happy for you guys to hear it. I'm really excited for you guys. And, you know, I'm really grateful for him to come on and take some time to do this. His name is Rob Greenfield, and you can find him at his website, robgreenfield.org. He's all over Facebook and things like that. So please enjoy the show. Make sure and leave me a review on iTunes and subscribe. Would be very, very grateful for that. You know, just help spread the word. That's the biggest thing, the biggest favor and kind of compliment you could give me is just telling your friends and, you know, maybe subscribing or sharing this would mean the world to me. And as always, I love hearing from all of you. I'm always available at my website, alexstarr.com. You can send me an email at alex@alexstarr.com as well. So thanks so much. You know, turn off the lights, get a nice setting for this one, and enjoy it with Mr. Rob Greenfield. So, Rob, thanks for coming on, dude. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Your resume is out of control. I thought, like, I've been applying for jobs here in Austin. I got a job, and so I was working on my resume, and I was looking at yours online, and I was like, damn, this is literally the most interesting guy at every party. Like, just, you know what I mean? Because, like, yeah, people travel, and, like, you know, people get different jobs and move around, but your list is insane. So it's kind of, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, except I'm often not very interesting at parties because usually loud noises make me very quiet and like run away.
Oh, really?
So sometimes I'm actually, I mean I know what you're saying, but it just comes to mind that at a party I might be less interesting.
Well, okay, I can see that. But like, so the funny thing is that you started off like you were in college and you were studying biology, right? And you have pictures of you doing beer bongs and stuff like that.
Yep.
I mean, you were a pretty standard college guy for a while, right?
Yeah, I was, for, you know, up until my early to mid 20s, I was a pretty standard person. You know, my passions were partying, material possessions. My goal was to be a millionaire by the time I was 30 years old. And like a very large portion of my time was focused on just chasing women and, you know, all that. That was like, you know, where most of my energy went to, those kind of key basic things.
And I know that you talk about that you didn't have like an epiphany moment, but walk us through, like, you know, kind of like how you talk about it in your TED talk.
Sure.
Which is cool, by the way. It's be the change in the be the change in the messed up world, right?
Yep.
Kind of like how I'm really interested in how you were able to be that guy and slowly let go of that identity.
Well, basically what happened was I've always been a fairly logical and rational guy. And what happened was I started to watch a lot of documentaries and read a lot of books and just started to realize that my life wasn't what I thought it was. Like a lot of the things I was doing were because corporations had spent millions of dollars on advertising and they got me. And I was doing the things because I was a consumer that they had sold on this idea that I needed these products or these things, maybe to be happy, maybe to be liked, or maybe just to even exist. So that was part of it. So basically, the other thing is that I realized that almost all of my actions were also monetized. The food I was eating, the car I was driving just to get around, rent, water, electricity, waste, like everything that I did was also monetized. And then lastly, I realized also that almost everything that I was doing was causing destruction to the world, to other species, to humanity as a whole. And so once I realized that my life was kind of ultimately destructive and not what I thought I was living, that's when I realized, okay, I have to start changing my life to live in alignment with my beliefs and to not be a hypocrite so that my actions and my words actually line up.
That is, well, so I think that the interesting part is that most people know that, right? Like, we all know that we're messing up the planet. We all know that what we're doing is not sustainable, but I like cheeseburgers. You know what I mean? Like, but you actually followed through with it is the interesting part. And I think you mentioned how it's like, it wasn't you just woke up one morning and threw everything out and that was it, but it was a process. It was like a very small step-by-step thing. I think you did like 100 things in a year, something like that, and kind of built off of that.
Yeah, so, you know, at that point, the thing is, okay, you're right. Millions of people our age are waking up to, you know, our existence and consciousness. Like, people are generally becoming fairly conscious to the problems out there. And I do think the area where we're lacking is action. We have more consciousness, but not as much action. And that was the big thing, is that I decided to take action. And I guess for me, I felt like I didn't have a choice because I was only 25-ish years old and I just wasn't going to live another, you know, maybe 5-6 decades as a hypocrite, as a person who didn't feel comfortable with my own actions. Like, I wasn't going to wake up in the morning and be like, feeling this sort of doom and gloom feeling of all the things that are wrong and knowing that I'm part of it, or go to bed feeling that way. I wanted to kind of give myself a fresh blank slate now that I knew. Because that's the thing. Maybe a lot of people know now, but 5 years ago, I didn't know. Like, I woke up to those things. And so I could have felt, you know, like it was an insurmountable feat. But instead, I basically made adventures out of it. I made it fun to make changes in my life. And then also, I took it a little at a time. I made goals. Like, if you were planning on starting $1 million business, you got to start somewhere, build the foundation. Well, I was trying to make a new life, and I knew that I had to start somewhere, make positive changes, build a foundation, and just kind of keep working.
Yeah, man, it's insane, and it's very cool. The part you just said about the consciousness shifting, What are your thoughts on that? Like, what are your opinion on why everyone seems to be waking up? Because I agree with you now. I think it's the internet. I think the internet has a lot to do with it. And I think that we're seeing a lot of other cultures and experiences that were once hidden from us. Like, even just saying, taking something as like ayahuasca, for example, which I did. Like, yeah. I only knew about that because of the internet, right? And so everyone is being open to all these new ideas all the time, and documentaries and stuff that everyone kind of is able to look around and be like, this is all kind of BS, you know, for a little bit. I mean, what do you think, kind of, what is instilling it now? Why is it changing?
Well, I do think that the ease of access to information is a big part of it. I mean, for $8 a month, you can have a Netflix account and have, like, you know, hundreds and thousands of educational documentaries to be able to watch, more than you could possibly probably watch in a month each month. And so ease of access is a big part of it. And then I think that plays a huge role. The internet, you know, plays a huge role. I guess also because now the problems are so visible that they're hard not to see is another reason. Like, in the past, when there weren't 7 billion people, the problems were easier to not see because they weren't as in our face, because they weren't as big yet, because you didn't have the proximity to them. But now I think so many of the great problems are really catching up and getting to a point where they are at the forefront and where we do see them. And then, again, back to information, you know, you have with Facebook and with the new form of media, where in the past journalists might spend weeks or months on a story. Now they have to pump out a story every day. You just have this incredible amount of information coming out every single day. So, you know, I guess the answer is I don't know, but those are the reasons that, like, come to mind as what I would think.
Where do you see, since we're on this train, I want to hear more. I really want to get about, like, your lifestyle and stuff too, but where do you see this going? And what I mean by that is, like, I think a lot of people look at society and say, there's so many things we could change. Is it farther towards socialism? Is it more free markets? Is it farther towards capitalism? Is it a mixture in the middle? Is it making, like, community-based cities? Is it less cars? There's so many different options, but I think everyone goes, is this the only choice we have? Is this the only setup that we can do? Is this the best that humans can think of as a society to create the way that we all function, right? Where do you see, like, what you do being a part of that in the future? Do you see it being possible for people to downgrade the way that you've downgraded your life? Not downgrade is a bad word for it, but
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Do you see that kind of taking place, or, like, do you see that kind of spreading into mainstream?
Yeah. And it's funny, because at first when you said downgrade, I totally, you know, understood. Yeah, of course. But then I thought about it after you caught yourself. I was like, well, wait a sec. I upgraded. By simplifying and downsizing and everything. But I have definitely upgraded my life. I'm happier, healthier, more purposeful.
But see, here's the funny part, man. Here's the funny part, Rob, is that I said that because you can call it brainwashing, you can call it marketing, you know, whatever you want to call it. It is hard for me, and I'm sure 99% of the people listening to this, and the people that you talk to on a daily basis, I'm sure you deal with this all the time. It's just hard for me to put myself in your shoes. And it's hard for me to be like, this guy is making $5,000 a year. You know what I mean? And he's giving the rest of it away, and he doesn't have a car. And it's hard to imagine. It's hard to think that it's not a worse life. When I also know that I'm sure that it's a beautiful life, but it's just, it's just hard to put myself in your shoes.
Well, here's one thing. And I totally understand you, because that's exactly how I felt in the past. But here's one thing that even I would have understood, I think, in the past, because I always looked into, like, Buddhism philosophy and things like that. But would you say that people who are very giving and live in the service of others are usually pretty happy? Like, do you see a correlation with that?
For sure. Of course. Yeah.
And I feel like that's a correlation with most people. Like, most people know that you know, they have those people in mind in their community that are very giving and are often super happy. And so what I've personally found is that the more that I give, the more that I receive. So how it works is, you know, often I'll give something up, but I find that by giving more to humanity and giving more to the earth, that I receive so much more back. And I don't mean directly. It might be because I feel a sense of purpose or a sense of belonging. It might be that, you know, I made someone smile or I made someone's life better. And ultimately, what I've found is that basically one of the most rewarding things, and this is something that I see pretty much in every culture and everybody I meet tends to agree, that one of the most rewarding things in life is making someone else's life better. And so the thing is, for me, that's what I focus my life on, is making the earth better, making other people's lives better. And the thing is, like, I just gained that back tenfold always. And so it just makes it really easy to do what I do because it's rewarding at the same time. Like, it's selfless, you would think, but it's not selfless because I get so much back.
Right. Right. There is no true altruism, right? That's a conversation for a whole other podcast.
Yeah. But that is the truth. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know any human beings who, where it is truly altruistic. You're right about that.
And I think that's built in on purpose, but you hit it on the head right there, the nail on the head, when you said that it gives you a sense of purpose, because that everyone else, like, we're all chasing it, right? Like, we're all chasing a sense of purpose, and we've all got misconstrued and misled to believe that it's through our jobs and it's through our money and it's through these different ways. You know, it's like you try and accrue money because you think that through money you can get your freedom, or that you can do these things that are going to give you those sense of purpose, right?
Yeah.
Because in the end, that's really what people are chasing.
Yeah.
But then you're just kind of starting at the you know, at the end of the fourth lap and working your way back.
You know? Yeah. I mean, if you ask anybody who really feels purposeful or a sense of purpose, they're going to also feel complete. And when you feel complete, then it doesn't matter how much money you have or how big your house is or how nice your car is or any of these things, because you already have a sense of completeness because you're so full of purpose. And so if we can work as individuals on feeling purposeful and useful, then a lot of those other things, the material needs and the material wants, they fall away without you even realizing it. Like, I didn't know those things were going to fall away, but they just have. I've just lost desire for them because there's other things that my life is filled with where they're not needed anymore.
That's an excellent point, man. You don't have as much of a void to fill up.
Yeah, very little void. And truth is the big thing. Like, now, you know, like, a lot of times people feel a gap, like a hole in their lives. I know that's something very much in our generation, but the other thing is, because one of the things I just want is truth, I can fill myself with truth. That's another thing that's free and that I can get from just information seeking. And so I can also fill myself in that way. And I think often that void is that confusion about your actions and what they are and the destruction they cause or that. And so by spending so much of my time on just understanding my actions, that's another element of, like, how I feel complete.
Yeah. Tell me, do you have, you know, tell us a little bit about, like, your lifestyle, you know, what you're doing right now, you know, kind of like how much money you're making, where are you living, how do you get around? Kind of
sure.
Fill us in a little bit on, like, right now, what's your living situation?
So it varies from time to time. I was living in a tiny house off the grid, a little 50 square foot tiny house off the grid in San Diego from 2015 to early 2016. And there I was living without a single bill or debt. I did a work exchange for someone's unused backyard. That's where I set up my tiny home. And I just did some basic work around the place in order to have the place where I could live off the grid and have my basic needs met. So that's what I did. So that was about 3 years ago that I moved in there. And that's when I got rid of my last bill and my last debt so that I was really able to live simply. A year and a half ago, I got rid of the tiny house, and now my girlfriend and I have been traveling since then. And so basically what I do is I do a lot of projects. And so usually wherever I'm doing a project, that's where I'm hosted. So either I'm camping, if I'm like, for example, this summer, Cheryl and I and a group of about 30 people biked across the country, across the United States.
The Green Riders, correct?
Yep. And then, but like right now, for example, I'm basically I've just spent the last 2 days in the garden at this really awesome little permaculture farm. And so they've been feeding me the last 2 days, and I've been working in the garden for like 6 or 8 hours. So that's a little bit of an idea. And then for money, I do public speaking. As you said, most of the money that I earn is donated to nonprofits. This year, my salary, my personal income cap that I set for myself was $5,000 to basically force myself to live simply and be resourceful. And so that came from public speaking. And I guess kind of answers your question. It's kind of complex because it's life. It's your whole life, you know?
Well, that's the crazy part about it, man, is because you're living not only a nomadic lifestyle, you know, but a lot of people, when they get into a job, even if, you know, it's like you do a job for 6 months or you do a job for a year, you know, and then maybe you move to another job, and but you're kind of still in the same career, or the same career path, or the same industry. And so to kind of just flip everything on its head and to be like, oh, I'm just working at these farms. And like, but you have so many projects on the side too. You're like, you're riding across country, making every community better as you go. You had a TV show on the Discovery Channel, right?
Yeah. That
aired. Yep, that's insane. That's, you flew down to Brazil without any money and then and then got to Panama.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't make it to Panama actually.
Oh, okay. I need to watch him.
I made it to Colombia, which, so I made it like almost the whole way. I just had the Darien Gap to cover. But yeah, that was, traveling through South America, landed in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil with no money, with just the clothes on my back and my small backpack with some basic gear. And the idea was to put myself out there and be dependent upon the kindness of others, to ultimately show people, to create an example of how people are actually really good. The mainstream media portrays the world as a dangerous, violent place. But I just don't believe that's the majority of people. I think the majority of people are good. Mm. And that's what my travels with no money really, really demonstrate.
Yeah. And it's just incredible. Like the different projects you have are, it's just really cool. So how much money do you make a year, would you say?
Well, personally, my income cap was 5,000. And so how it works is I don't accept any money above that. What I do instead is, for example, when I did the Discovery Channel TV show, they would have paid me $30,000, but I wrote right into the contract, you will donate the money directly to these nonprofits. So I don't ever touch the money or see the money. And instead, like same with my book, which is Dude Making a Difference. I've never seen any money from the book. They just send a check directly to different nonprofits.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause that's it's a rude question. You're not supposed to ask, but to you, it's and also just like, I always ask people that anyway. And some people get offended at me and I'm like, I don't really care. Like, I'll tell you how much I make. Yeah,
people are living their lives based around money. You should be able to talk about it.
Yeah, that's what I think too. But I mean, I get how some people, it's just kind of like awkward or something. But I agree. It's kind of a weird thing. But yeah, man, I the traveling thing really hit home with me because I've always thought that too. And I did a couple of I did like a 6 month solo backpacking trip in South America, and then I did a 3 month one. And I always have thought when I look around, you know, if humans are inherently bad, every person listening to this, or you, me, how many thousands of interactions do you personally even go through a day, or do you see, mm-hmm. right? Or how many interactions worldwide? We have, 7 billion people? So that means that there's probably, let's say, 10 trillion interactions a day going on. And then we see, like, the 10 on news that are really bad.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like there's...
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's this, yeah, I like that. I've never actually thought of it quite that way. It's the bad things that stick out. Like, for example, shark attacks. Only 10 shark attack, what is it, a 10 or 100 shark attacks happen in the entire world per year. And in the United States, it's less than 10. And only one person in the United States typically dies by a shark per year. Yet people have this crazy fear of it. You know, it's absolutely, it's totally, absolutely absurd to have any fear of sharks.
Hey, no, and, it is not, dude. You suit yourself, man. They're fucking terrifying. What are you talking about?
They are, but statistically speaking,
right.
You're, you know, there's so many things that are more like a coconut falling on your head while you're on vacation is like 30 times more likely to kill you than a shark. But you put that so well, and that's that in your lifetime, maybe a few bad things happened to you, but you lived for 70 or 80 years, and you had probably millions of good interactions and a couple bad ones. So I do think people are generally good. Now, I do want to state one thing, or, you know, mention one thing, and that is that, you know, over the last years, I've definitely come to realize that I have life easier as a white male from a Western country. That just makes life a lot easier in many ways, like traveling with no money across South America is a whole different story from someone from Central America trying to leave Central America to get to the United States because they want to get freedom from their country. They're going to have a whole different level of challenges and a whole different story. So just want to acknowledge that I'm not delusional, and I realize those things.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Like, I mean, look, if you're born in Syria right now, your perception of humanity is going to be much different than a lot of other people on the planet, you know, or the neighborhood you grew up in. But yeah, overall, it's I think people statistically and disproportionately, it's like it's just impossible to make an argument that we're not good, or else this wouldn't work. You couldn't have 7 billion people and more or less have a functioning world. Like, you know, this is the safest it's been in, you know, this is, I think, the least amount of violence in the history of the of history that we have, like, a documented history. And it just wouldn't work unless people were inherently good, I think.
Yeah. It's it is crazy that we live in what is supposedly the most peaceful time.
Well, see, now here's a big caveat to that, man. If you get into like pre-agriculture revolution, where, you know, we don't have any documented history of that, we're just somewhat speculating. That's where they think that there could have been less violence then. It seems to be like at the turning point where it was civilization and we started to really just condense into these, like, really, you know, concentrated areas. That's when violence spiked, because it was like we started parceling out pieces of land and we started getting very territorial. And that's when the violence skyrocketed for the past, you know, 10,000 years in the Dark Ages and everything. So
very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Like, side story. But yeah, all the different things you do are just unbelievably fascinating, man. But tell me about, like, do you have a cell phone, for instance? Like, whose computer are you on right now? Like, how do you do all that stuff?
Yeah, I got rid of my cell phone in end of 2014. So I've been cell phone free for, I guess, close to 3 years now. That was the last bill that I had. So I don't have any monthly bills at all to my name.
Oh my God. That's insanity.
And yeah, so I just have a computer. You know, like, I just have a MacBook Air that I bought on Craigslist for $400 used. And then I also have an iPod Touch. I got that so I could do Facebook Live and things like that. So, and then I just use Wi-Fi everywhere that I, you know, and the nice thing about that is that it forces me to disconnect, because even myself, I have an imbalance with being on the online far too often. And so at least by not having a cell phone, it forces me that at least when I'm out, I can take some time off and be fully present. And I think that's one of the keys to health and happiness, is to be able to be present in where you are. And I find that to be so much easier when I don't have the ability for anyone to bombard my head at any moment.
It is a fact, man. And this is, you know, it's very cliche to, you know, like, oh, the cell phones are stealing, you know, those young kids just on their phones all the time. But I would say it's almost physiologically impossible for any human to not become addicted to it.
It is very hard. I've been very, very addicted to my gadgets at times.
It's hard. And the internet, like you're talking about, just being online, it's just the constant distractions, constant entertainment.
Yeah, it's definitely it's such a tricky thing because it's such a useful tool for expanding your consciousness, but it also can be one of the things that can shrivel you up and like make you a slave.
For sure. The problem is that no one knows how to deal with it because it's been around for 10 years.
It's crazy how little it's been around, man. That's so crazy. Yeah. I mean, for how short of a time, it seems like there's been no other way of life on Earth. But of course, this is just the tiniest little slice of existence.
I know. And all of a sudden, I mean, look at this. We're literally talking to each other. I'm watching you on this millimeter screen. Like, I don't even, you know, I always think about like if aliens were to come down, they would think that screens were our food source because they see people like going to work, like it work in quotation marks, like working and like staring at these screens. And then in our off time, we come home and like kick back on the couch and stare at screens.
Oh my gosh.
And then you're like pulling the screen out of your pocket. And like they would be like, oh, the screen, it must be like their source of energy. Like,
well, and there's been plenty of times where I've prioritized the screen over food. I can't tell you the number of times that it's come first.
Or ice cream with the screen. That's what I do. I just do the whole like, you know, watch a TV show or something with some ice cream. That's really good too.
That does sound nice.
So like, how do you think, I know, so you got a vasectomy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about this.
Five years ago.
Yeah. And that's that's crazy. And is that because you don't want to add more population or it's because you just hate whiny babies? I mean, because I actually saw that and I was like, hey, it's not a bad idea.
Well, it wasn't because of the population thing, actually. That was 5 years ago. It was actually when I was just beginning to really dive into environmental type stuff. And I guess I hadn't really looked into overpopulation very much at that point. I wasn't even very knowledgeable on it. So that wasn't really even close to the main factor. For me, it comes, I mean, there's many things, but one of them comes down to time on Earth, the time that I have. How can I most effectively use my time? So at that time, I had already decided that I was really dedicating my life to having as good of a, you know, as great of a positive impact as I could on Earth. And I just knew, I know how time consuming raising children are. And I'm not saying it can't be ridiculously rewarding or like your biggest purpose in life. But for me, I knew that raising a kid of my own was not the way that I would be able to be the most impactful. It was by having a life of freedom where I'd be able to do these sorts of activism campaigns and adventures and be able to reach, you know, more youth, be able to spend more time at school speaking to kids and things like that. So that was a big part of it. And the other big part of it is that, you know, people have this concept that people who don't want kids are selfish. That's kind of like one of the biggest things that, like, when I wrote that blog why I got a vasectomy at age 25, and people are like, oh, this guy's just being selfish. And ultimately, I think one of the most selfish things you can do is have kids for the wrong reason. To accidentally have a kid that you don't want is, I think, one of the most selfish things that you can do. To not raise a kid well and give it your full, like, give it so much for 18 years what you committed to, you know, that's what I feel is so selfish. And so I just didn't want to possibly ever be in that scenario and be that. So that was, you know, another part of it.
You think
so those
change?
Are a couple of reasons.
You think you'll change your mind?
No, I definitely don't.
I guess
been
it's
5 years.
It's a weird question because you wouldn't be able to know that you're going to change your mind. Because
yeah, but I think, yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, it's been, I'm 31 now. I did it when I was 25. And there's just never been any moment, like I never look at a kid and I'm like, man, one day, I wish one day I could have a little kid that looks like me and acts like me. Like I have no desire for that. I would have to have really screwed up my thinking for that to be the case. I really don't think I'll ever want one. Here's the thing though.
You have a girlfriend.
There's so many. I do have a girlfriend.
She might want one.
She doesn't. She's okay. Very confident. And if she does, then she can. Then you know we've talked about it. And if she decides her purpose in life is to have kids, then maybe we just wouldn't be together anymore. Or here's the thing. Here's another big part of it. If I ever want kids, I can adopt. You know, that's one of the big things. There's so many neglected humans on Earth right now. Why do I need to bring another human on Earth when I can give my time to people that are neglected and need love and need energy? I'd rather put my energy there.
Do you ever need, you know, when you decided to make this commitment to just, I mean, completely change, you're almost like a different species. And I mean that as a compliment. Like,
yeah.
You are living such an alternative lifestyle. And, you know, this podcast is called Rewrite the Rules. And you're like the epitome of someone rewriting the rules of every aspect of their life. Most of the time I have people on that have like, you know, rewrote the rules of, you know, some type of thinking or, you know, their job, you know, like what they do for money. And it's like, you have rewritten the rules to literally every aspect of living within this society, you know? When you decided to make that commitment, I mean, was there fear in there? Like, what did your friends say? Like, what are they, you know, because you're just living on like this complete fringes of society.
Mm. In many ways I am. And there's very little fear. You know, one of the things is as a minimalist and, you know, that's a, you know, popular term out there, the idea of owning very few possessions. But, you know, for me, like the more that I've simplified my life, the less stuff that I have. But also I practice the idea of minimalism with just everything. Like it's a philosophy. It's a way of thinking about existence. And so one of the things is the less stuff that I have, the more that I really am able to embrace my impermanence and how temporary my life is. Because here's the thing, and this is not something I ever realized would happen, but my life is in a way now that every possession that I own fits on my bicycle or before it fit on my backpack. So everything I own is here. I have no bills and I have no debt. So there's no accounts that are like, you know, would be in limbo. So the idea is that if I died, there'd be very little to do. Like there'd be very little to deal with on my behalf. And so it's this like interesting feeling of now that my life has been simplified so much, I'm much more comfortable with the idea of just not existing anymore, the idea of just dying, the idea of tomorrow just no longer existing. And so, like, now that I've gotten to that point, what's to fear? Because I don't even mind if I don't exist.
That's some heavy shit, man. I mean, that's about as deep as it can get right there, honestly, because you just hit on so many things about, you know, Western civilization and our fear of death and like trying to accrue all of these, you know, like these, you know, statues and auditoriums named after us and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you know, to like everyone's about legacy, leaving something after you die, you know. And I know, yeah, you've kind of read up on Buddhist stuff, but that's where a lot of things. The society is kind of backwards is that we're so scared of death and that we kind of like throw it in this corner, you know, like when people get old, throw them in the old people home. When they die, you kind of just, you know, make their body look all nice and go look at it for a second and say some nice things and throw them in the dirt. You know,
well,
what I mean?
They never see the dirt. Actually, they're in a coffin.
Right.
Yeah.
So you see them like all like, and you know, they get dressed up in a suit and then you close the lid and shove them over there and he was great. All right, everyone, let's go get lunch.
It's a very interesting thing. I mean, I was in Port Townsend, Washington a couple weeks ago, and I spent time with a lot of elderly people. Like this one woman, Judy, was, I don't know, in her late 60s or something like that, maybe 70. And we were talking about this, and she said, you know, you're young, and, you know, let's see how you feel if you were to get cancer when you were, like, you know, let's say how you would feel then. And I totally understand the perspective. Like, I am young, and at this point, it's unlikely that I would die of many of the things that cause death to people. But I just truly, I truly believe what I, what I'm saying about impermanence. And I just, it really is something that I never would have thought that I could feel. And it's only come from totally rethinking life.
It's not, you've taken like the weight off of your life.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Like, people have so much weight on them. And so when you realize your lack of importance, it takes the weight off. Now, the other thing is to realize your importance, because it's a kind of an interesting thing here. I believe that we're really unimportant, but also really important at the same time. And here's why. Because, okay, whatever, we don't know why we're on Earth or the purpose of life or any of that stuff. But I do believe that life is precious. And I do believe that most people care about their lives. And so the way I look at it is, okay, even if it's all meaningless in the grand scheme of things, if I can, you know, create a place, it doesn't have to be a place, but it could be a feeling. If I can create and help someone to be happier and healthier and make their life better, or if I can make the life of an animal better by, say, cleaning up a pond that's full of trash, so there's actually a clean pond for the ducks and the fish, or, you know, or maybe I can just grow a big vegetable patch, and maybe there's some elders and we have dinner together and they have fresh vegetables for the first time that year. And, you know, their day is really brightened. Like, to me, all that matters, because life is precious. And so if I can brighten people's day and make the world a little bit better of a place that day, then that's worth living for, and it matters and it's important. And that's how I feel. But then also remembering the bigger picture of life, that also we're not important, and just kind of balancing those two things.
Yeah. I mean, those are the balance between pretty much everything is the way, you know, I mean, you have to find a balance with everything. You know, I've always thought of the part that, you know, when you hear people go, you know, everybody is, you know, unique, and everyone's entitled, you know, that everyone is great, and you're all, you know, you're like, you know, you're all special snowflakes. And it's like, yes, that's true. And then the opposite is, you are all insignificant pieces of dust, and you're all the same. You know, we're all the same humans that have the same feelings and the same ways that we reconcile, and the way that we think about the future and the past and how we move in our physical bodies. And those two are quite literally, it's a paradox, right? Because yeah, we're all living and dying at the exact same time. We're all special and unique, and we're all completely insignificant at the exact yeah, same time. And this is what you said too.
And we're all delusional. That's one of the most important things
what
for
do you
me
mean?
Is that, well, we're all delusional about our existence. Mm. Like, you know, most of us don't really understand our existence, and we believe in all these things that just aren't true. We have all these preconceived notions. Like, most of us are living fairly delusional lives. I'm still delusional about many things. I'm delusional about less. Like, 5 years ago, I was living very delusionally. Now it's much less so. But the reason I bring this up is because, have you seen the movie The Big Short?
Yes, with Steve Carell, that one?
Yeah.
About the financial yep, collapse? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so like, that's a perfect example, like the financial collapse. You know, 1 million people in the United States lost their house. I don't know if it was overnight or within a year or something like that. Most of these people thought they would have that house forever or as long as they wanted it. And, you know, so many people are living in this way where 2 weeks from now, everything they think they have could no longer be theirs. Mm. That's a state of delusion. Like, they don't realize that, you know, for example, if the food stopped coming to their city, what would happen to their life? Mm. All these things that our societies are propped up on, that people just don't see, don't think about, don't understand. Like, that's all delusional to me. So, I was doing that project called Trash Me, where I wore all my trash for, I lived like the average American and wore all the trash I created for a month and looked like I guess you could say, a total fool walking around New York City covered in trash. And at first I was worried what people would think. Like, about 2 or 3 days in, the rule was I had to wear it everywhere I went. And so I didn't really want to go outside. I was like, man, you know, what are people going to think? But then I watched The Big Short and I was reminded, well, wait a sec, we're all delusional. And then once I remembered that, it was like, who cares? I can go out in New York City covered in trash because every person I walk by is delusional anyway. So why should I really care what they think? And once you stop caring what people think, your whole life just frees up to be able to do what you want and really like pursue the life you want.
So the secret is to just picture everyone else being delusional.
Yeah, that helped me. That's helped me for sure.
You were like picturing them that they're just lost in, because that sounds kind of like your ego talking a little bit.
Well, we're all delusional. Like, I've just realized that we are all delusional. Okay. I mean, including myself, like every single person in the United States has their own delusions. And so because of that, it just doesn't matter what people think. Like, I think the wrong thing about people all the time. I pass judgments that turn out like, oh wow, I was totally incorrect about that. And yeah. So just the amount of that has made it so much easier to not worry what people think.
Yeah. And you probably, I mean, through the past, this whole experience that you've done has, I would say, almost like you are probably at like 10% of what the normal person thinks, you know, spends their time thinking about what other people think.
Yeah, I still do. Yep. You've got that right. I still do, but it's much less. Like, when I was in high school, I could spend an hour in front of the mirror before school, gelling my hair and, you know, worrying just about the aesthetics of my face and my hair, what people thought. Like, so I've gotten way past that. I still think and worry some about what people think, but it doesn't like consume me, and it doesn't consume so much of my time. Because for so many people, they spend hours and hours that are basically wasted. That if they didn't care what people thought so much, they could spend those hours doing something way better.
Yeah, and it leads. Becomes it's a habit, I think, and it's a habit that you can break. You know, you spend time doing it and you kind of just like, oh, this is the way I think about what other people think, and then you can slowly break free of that through a lot of different ways, but obviously kind of the things that you've done.
Well, yeah, speaking of breaking free, like, for example, that's what I did. I practiced breaking free. It's not like it happened overnight. I wanted to break free of that, so I had little drills, like little sort of games that would help me break free. Like, for example, 1 week I made a rule for 1 week that I couldn't eat with any utensils. I could only eat with my hands wherever I was, whether I was at home or at a party or at a restaurant. And so, you know, for that week, like, I had to do something that really put myself out of my comfort zone, that a lot of people would be like, why is that guy eating with his hands, and think it's weird. But by doing that sort of weird thing, and of course, under the knowledge that, of course, billions of people only eat with their hands. So it's not actually weird. It's actually a normal thing in many cultures. But by doing that in the United States, where the culture isn't to do that, it put me outside of my comfort zone, and it helped me to, because for that week, I had to get over worrying what people thought about me, because I had made this rule for myself. And doing things like that are what helped me to get to where I am today.
I love that, man. Do you have any other examples?
Well, one thing is, another thing that doesn't fit exactly but is part of it, is leaving the house with no money, no credit card, no way to access money. And maybe it's just the first time you do it that you leave your house to go to work or school at, say, 7 a.m. and then you come home at whatever, 9 p.m. and that whole day, no money, no credit cards. And that forces you to think about everything in a different way. How are you going to find food? Maybe you have to eat food from the garbage that day. You have to go dumpster diving, or maybe you have to go to a restaurant where someone left their leftovers on their plate that was going to get thrown away, and then eat that. So, which leads me into the other one, is dumpster diving. That was a big one for me, because it's a big hit to the ego to collect food from the dumpster, even though it's perfectly good food, and that's a whole nother talk. That was one that, and then even publicly talking about it, that was another exercise. Maybe you don't even have to tell anyone, but you could just go to a dumpster and pick up an apple and then just throw it in the woods. That could be an exercise.
What other things, like, yeah, the dumpster diving thing would be extremely, that'd be a tough one. What other, like, minor things for people listening that, you know, maybe don't want to start by jumping in the dumpster or, like, doing that? Like, the minor things of, like, I love the one, like, eating with your hands for the week. What other kind of minor things did you do or would you suggest to kind of just instill and get people out of their comfort zone in minor ways throughout their daily lives?
So another big one for me was just leaving my cell phone at home for a day. So it
that's a really good one.
Yeah. It was Thanksgiving of 2012, I think. And I had had a cell phone since I was 16. And at that point I was probably 25. So basically for the last about 10 years, I hadn't really gone out without my cell phone, except for like, I would shut it off when I was camping, but never like within the city, like where I lived. And so to me, it was like this kind of monumental thing. Like, I'm going to not bring my cell phone with me today. And I went over to my friend's house and had the whole day. And I was like, nobody can contact me except the people that I'm sitting at dinner with. And it was monumental for me. And so that's a big one. Just shut your cell phone off, put it in a drawer, leave your house, and then be out for the whole day and come back. That's one.
That's a really good one, man. I haven't done that in a while, but I'll leave it in the car, even just going to the grocery store and things like that, like even smaller than the whole day. And that helps a lot too. And yeah, you catch yourself like sitting there in line, you know, waiting to check out and pull out the phone and start looking at it. And you're like, God, what am I doing? And so when you don't have it, you know, even just for simple things like that, you kind of start, oh, that's right. There's a world out here. Yeah. And then, you know what happens, man? My ego will play tricks on me. My mind will play tricks on me. And this is literally what happened, Rob. If I don't have my phone and I'm looking around and I see everyone else on their phone, I'm like, God, these people don't know what they're missing out on. There's a whole big world out here, guys. But then, of course, if I have my phone with me, I pull it out and I'm like, oh, I have important things to do. So I'm not like these other people.
And that's one of the biggest things, convenience. Anytime something is convenient, you're more likely to do it. So, for example, if your cell phone was covered in honey, you'd be much less likely to grab it because you'd be like, well, I don't want to get covered in honey right now. But when it's not, you're just going to grab it. If your cell phone is on top of a 20-foot ladder, you're probably less likely to go up there and check it, to check Facebook for 1 second when you don't need to check it anyway. You're probably still going to climb the ladder quite a bit, but not as much. And so what I always do is find exercises and basically like burdening myself for things that I'm trying to, you know, get past, things that I'm kind of addicted to or something like that. I make it harder to be able to do it. So like this, you know, one of the things that a new thing that I'm doing is with my computer, there's an app that's called Freedom that you can download. It works for your computer and your cell phone. You can set a schedule so that it automatically shuts off your internet at a certain time and then turns it back on. So for me, like I have it automatically shut off at 8 p.m. and it doesn't turn on until 8 a.m. So that gives me 12 hours of not being on now, really? Which is huge.
It's called Freedom, like F-R-E-E-D-O-M, spelled just like the normal way.
Yeah, just normal. There's like a picture of a butterfly on a green background. I think it's a butterfly.
No way. Man,
yeah, it's like a butterfly.
Okay, yeah, that is huge because it's, I mean, like we talked about earlier, it's almost impossible to like to force yourself. It's addictive. It's so addictive.
Yep, and that forces it. And once it's on, you can't turn it off. So it's locked.
Dang.
Well, you can actually choose. You can have a setting where you are able to turn it off, but I would turn it on. So I had to do the forced one where once it's on, I can't turn it off.
Yeah. And I think it's a good idea too, to like, all these things that we have now are so easy. Everything's just so easy to get these rewards, right? And these very, very, we got porn and we got ice cream everywhere and I mean, really, man, you know, and you got the dopamine coming at you from Instagram and Snapchat and shit all day. And you don't have to do anything to work for it.
Yep. That's the thing. And I've felt it so many times. It's just the notifications, just that instant gratification.
Mm.
And that's what it's a lot of it is about, is I think a lot of it is feeling a purpose, feeling gratification. So that's one thing. Another thing is shutting off the notifications on your phone so that, like, on all the apps, I don't have notifications on any of the apps on my iPod. So that way, you don't have that constant bombardment. Another thing is, you know, I think there's something really to be said for conscious consumption of information. So the Facebook newsfeed's the opposite. You don't choose what you're going to consume. You're just scrolling, and then whatever's there, you end up reading or watching. Whereas the opposite would be saying, what do I want to learn about today? What do I want to know? And then going and finding a video on that, or an article on that, or reading a book. And actually, that's such a better way of using our time wisely and educating ourselves. And so what I did is I got rid of my Facebook newsfeed so that, again, I'm doing all these things because I don't have the self-control and I have to force myself.
Yeah,
so
nobody does.
I don't really know really hardly anyone with a smartphone who has good self-control.
Even old people that like just got it 6 months ago, like my mom and my grandpa, they're probably the biggest, they're even more into it than I am. I mean, it's just once you get a human brain on that kind of, yeah, instant gratification that's right there, everyone is susceptible, everybody.
Absolutely. And so I guess one of the things, like you mentioned earlier, addiction. And so I've found that it turns out that it's not, for me at least, an addiction. What it is, it's an extreme behavioral thing. So because if it's like, if you're addicted to drugs and you don't have that drugs, you have withdrawal and you have, you know, physical things going on. And there's other aspects, but for me, if I like put the Freedom app on, say for 2 days, and I know that I can't possibly get on the internet, and I put the computer out of sight and out of mind, I can have a wonderful 2 days and I don't have negativity. Instead, it's just positivity, which tells me that probably it's not an addiction. It's just an extreme behavioral programming.
Mm. Interesting. I never thought about it like that before. Just a very, very ingrained habit, basically, that everybody has become accustomed to.
Yeah. If the phone's in the pocket, it's just so habitual to pull it out and then flick through there and burn those couple of minutes while you're waiting. So that's, for me, it doesn't actually turn out that it's an addiction. It's just habitual. And once you remove the ability to have that habit, then life floods back in other ways. And then the thing is, it's easier because you're like, oh yeah, this is great. I like doing this. I like doing this. Yeah. I feel good. You know?
So yeah. That's a really good point. What is your family and what do your friends say about your, you know, completely alternative lifestyle?
I don't get, as far as family and friends, it's pretty much all positive. You know, my family definitely likes what I do. I have one very, very lucky thing, and that's that I have a very supportive family. We all support each other. Unless one of us is doing something really messed up, we're all pretty much going to leave each other alone and just do, as long as like we know that the other person is doing what's making them happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like we never really mess with each other and tell them you do this or do that. So I'm very lucky to have a family like that. It makes everything a lot easier. But you know, beyond that, they actually really enjoy it. Like my Aunt Louise, I've seen her just making huge positive changes, in the last 4 or 5 years. Just when I visit her, just she's been, you know, for example, getting rid of a lot of stuff that she doesn't need. And, you know, it's kind of crazy when I first started to not use plastic shopping bags and I went grocery shopping with her, she insisted on double bagging everything. And like, there was no budging and I had to just be like, okay, you know, I had to step back and just be like, okay. But after 3 years, you know, she was like, okay, I don't need these bags anymore. And without me putting pressure, she just saw me doing my thing and she sees, okay, it works. And then I think she saw that I was happy and healthy and everything, and so she kind of picked up on it and did it. So within my family and my friends, I see lots of them also making very positive changes. So I think I'm generally a pretty positive influence with my family and friends.
It must be tough to straddle the line between not like interjecting, you know, your opinion on a lot of the way people live their lives, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's less challenging than it used to be because, well, I want to enjoy life. And what's not enjoyable is interjecting your opinion all the time. Like, it's not fun to have to do that. Like, I don't think anyone who's constantly interjecting their opinion is, like, really content.
Good point.
And so, like, as we talked about earlier, I'm not selfless. I want to enjoy life. I want to really, you know, enjoy my days. And so I'm not going to just, I do it some, but I don't want to make too much of a habit of it because it just makes, you know, a lot of times things sucky. And here's the thing though, like for change makers listening to this who are trying to get family or roommates or things like that to change. Well, I don't focus on any one particular person, which is easier for me to do because I don't live with one person. I don't go to class with the same person all the time. I don't work with the same person because I'm constantly traveling. And so my thing is that I'm trying to affect change. And so everywhere I go, I can do that. And the people who don't want to change, well, I don't have to deal with them tomorrow. So it's very easy. So I just kind of play the numbers game and try to put it out there. And I know some people are going to be like, yeah, let's do that. And then, you know, that in that way I can be successful. So, but I do want to say that's easier for me because I don't live with my mom or dad or a husband that feels totally different or any of those sorts of things.
Right. Yeah. And that's a really good point. Awesome, man. Well, this has been so cool, man. And just your entire story and everything. I love everything about it. Where can people find you? What kind of stuff you got coming up? You have the book, Dude Making a Difference. But kind of where are the best people, the best places for people to keep up with what you're doing and tune in?
Yeah, just my website, robgreenfield.org, is full of, you know, the stuff we talked about. There's lots of helpful guides for a lot of these sorts of things on there. And then on social media, just type in Rob Greenfield into Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. I use all those. I use Facebook more than anything. And then if you want to see if I'm coming to your city, go to robgreenfield.org/speaking schedule, and that kind of says where I'll be. So, you know, I travel around a lot, so there's an all right chance I'll be coming to your city or a city near you.
Right on, man. Perfect. Well, thanks. This has been a year in the making, so thanks so much for coming on. Stick around for a couple minutes, but we'll go ahead and end it there, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. It was a very enjoyable hour of talking.
Cool, dude. Hey, thank you so much for tuning in. Man, what an interesting guy. That was Rob Greenfield. And as always, go ahead and subscribe, leave a review, share this, whatever you want to do would be incredible. All right, guys, have a great rest of your week. Check back then. I'm going to be starting to post every week. Got some great stuff coming up. Love you all. Toodles. Bye-bye.